Chapter 14. The impacts were deafening, filling the superstructure of the Sisyphean with ringing echoes of metal on metal. Interior bulkheads crumpled like sheet foil with the force of the boarding torpedoes slamming into the wallowing ship's flank. Layered steel and ceramite broke apart as the blunt snouts of the torpedoes tore into the greatest void within the Iron Hands ship, its embarkation deck. Magnamelter blasts exploded from the torpedoes' frontal sections, and assault launchers scattered cones of red-hot shrapnel before them. Little additional damage was caused, as Cadmus Tyro had ordered the deck emptied of trans-atmospheric craft in anticipation of such an attack. The rotating razor cogs of the boarding torpedoes ground to a halt, and their locking bolts blew off in sequence. Vermanus Cybus issued the attack order with a synapse pulse through the MIU implant in his skull. No sooner had his orders been received than the blast shutters at the edge of the embarkation deck slammed up into their housings, and 24 rhinos of ebony and iron raced towards the boarding torpedoes. Cybus would mount no static defense of his ship, but a stinging counterattack. He rode atop his heavily modified command rhino, secured in the cupola by the magnetic clamps on his mechanized lower body. He mashed the firing triggers of the pintle-mounted storm bolters, sending chugging streams of contrails playing over the worm-like maws of the torpedoes. Streams of bolter shells blistered the scorched outer armor of the torpedoes as shielded storm turrets rotated clear of their housings and returned fire. Up-armoured and driven over the debris of the torpedo's entry at engine-shredding speed, none of the racing vehicles were stopped. Internal blast shutters blew out from the torpedoes, and a roar of animalistic hatred echoed from within, like the hideous cave-dwelling ferrodrakes of Karashi. Cybus slewed his rhino to a halt as the snouts of the torpedoes fell away and a salt ramp slammed down onto the blasted deck plates.
"Incoming!" he yelled across a variety of wavelengths. "The iron endures!"
The crew doors of the rhinos slammed back and black-armoured warriors disembarked from their vehicles, nearly 200 battle brothers moving forwards to occupy positions of cover amid fallen stanchions, ruptured deck plates and toppled bulkheads. A howling mass of twisted flesh and sutured armour vomited from the interior of the torpedo that had impacted first, 100 or more. Things that were unlike anything Cybus had ever seen. His artificial eyes were capable of rendering visual information in multiple spectra and with incredible clarity, but right now he wished they were not. No two of the monsters were alike. Hybrid things of glistening flesh, distorted anatomies and swollen muscle. Their limbs were elongated, bladed and chained with whirling hooks. They moved with astounding speed, some on limbs like organic piston springs, others with the ruddy haunches of powerful beasts of burden. Like wax effigies left too close to a heat lamp, their plasticized bodies were molten amalgams of 100 conjoined anatomies, genetically manipulated abominations that should never have been given life. But worse than all their deformities and abnormalities was the stark fact that their bodies had clearly once been space marines. No mortal flesh could have borne such torturous cellular mutilation and survived. The gunfire from the Iron Hands slackened as that awful truth slammed home, and the monsters seized that momentary lapse in discipline to close the distance between the two forces with terrifying speed. Perhaps a score were cut down in a stuttered volley of fire as the Iron Hands recovered from their shock. Explosive fire and close-range missile blasts reduced the dead to component organs, but it was nowhere near enough to stop the tide of aberrant flesh. The monsters struck the Iron Hands in knots of stone-hard muscle and bone. Cassander had been gene-crafted to dismiss the debilitating effects of fear. His physiology was engineered to block the chemical and neurological responses to the emotion, and his mind had been trained to resist its touch. He had waged the Emperor's wars for hundreds of years and had never let the many terrors of the galaxy keep him from his mission. But nothing had prepared him for this. This was fighting against the warriors he still called brothers. In the wake of his failed vengeance on Fabius, the demented slave servitors had hurled him into one of the sepulchral iron-walled chambers with a host of snuffling, stinking beasts. He expected them to attack, to fall upon him with their anatomically impossible weapon limbs and tear him apart. Instead, they had accepted him as one of their own. Only then had Cassander understood that these abominations had once been legion warriors like him. Whatever legion they had once been, they were now appalling monsters with drooling, fang-filled mouths and ragged talons. Surgical and genetic deviants, monsters with only the last vestiges of their humanity remaining. Only then had he seen how ravaged and distorted his own body had become. Bloated beyond recognition and discoloured from the poisonous filth and biological agents injected into his body, his flesh was now a mockery of its once proud perfection. He saw the swelling in his muscles, the hardness of his skin, and the distended protrusion of his bones at every joint. The monsters didn't attack him, because he was one of them. Kept like exotic beasts in a menagerie, they were fed a nutrient-rich gruel that Cassander alone seemed to understand was laced with growth hormones and gene triggers that enhanced their aggression and strength. Fights and bloodshed were endemic after each serving, and numerous times Cassander was forced to defend the portion of the chamber's floor upon which he curled up to sleep. He had ignored the gruel, though his stomach rebelled at his fasting. His reforged physiology demanded feeding, and he could feel its hot-housed metabolism beginning to devour itself. This was a good thing. It meant an end to his suffering. He would die, and this nightmare would end. Then he remembered his words to Navara, and the credo of the fists, each of Rogal Dorn's tenets hammered through his skull as though driven by the fist of the Emperor himself. Determination, self-reliance, and steadfastness. Honour, duty, and the ability to endure anything. Cassander ate sparingly, digesting only enough to keep his strength up, and fighting to control the sudden urges to do harm to those around him. His moods swung violently, and it took every last scrap of his mental fortitude to hold on to the things that made him who he was, a warrior of the Legiones Astartes and a proud son of Rogal Dorn. Time held even less meaning for him in this twilight world of savagery, and then came the moment when the bulkhead doors had been thrown open and they had been herded into an electrified channel that led to a hot tube of iron that boomed and shook as though being shot from the barrel of an artillery piece. Thunderous impact, an ultra-rapid deceleration. Sequenced blasts of superheated air forced them to the front of the tube in a crammed mass of howling rage. Ceiling-mounted atomizers filled the air with chemstims that made Cassander's eyes bleed and his blood pulse in time with a booming thunder in his chest. Both his hearts were now beating. He felt light-headed, and the oxygen-rich soup of his altered blood work was making him dizzy with fear and anger. The potent mix of shrieking emotions swelled his already fearsomely proportioned musculature with adrenal boosters and rage-inducing stimulants. The bulkhead wall that penned them in rose up, and bright light flooded the iron tube in which they had been confined. A stampede of howling monsters charged from the interior, mindless and fueled by alchemical rage. Ahead, warriors in black warplate fired heavy guns that tore through the first monsters to escape their captivity. The smell of their blood and their bodies' interior cavities filled Cassander's newly awakened senses with a need to tear the flesh from their bones. He fought against the sensation, but was carried into the warriors in black despite his reluctance to approach them. He knew he should recognize them. He knew they were not his enemy, that they were brothers. Yet what his brain was telling him and what his body demanded were two very different things. Cassandra watched his fellow monsters kill with sweeps of taloned paws or with a toxic vomit of bilious fluids. This was not warfare, as weighed by the legions. It was degenerate slaughter. All around Cassandra, bolter fire was wreaking a bloody toll on the monsters, blowing out plugs of flesh or mushrooming from spines in gouts of stinking blood. He fought to keep clear of the swirling melee, but inevitably he found himself face to face with a warrior in gleaming black plate and a fist of purest silver steel. Cassandra threw up his arms, fighting down the urge to rip this warrior's head off.
"Ironhand," he yelled, "I am of the legions."
His words were mangled by the genetic reshaping of his jawbone, and if the warrior understood him, he gave no sign. The legionary's bolter erupted with flame, and Cassandra buckled as the shot struck him square in the centre of his chest. The pain was incredible, but instead of blowing him apart from the inside, the shell deflected from his freshly ossified bone carapace. Cassandra roared and plucked the bolter from the iron grip of the space marine. He snapped the weapon in two and hurled away the broken halves before leaping at the unarmed warrior. One blow broke his helmet open. Another ripped it from the gorget. Pneumatic gases hissed around the revealed features, part augmetic, part flesh. Cassandra's rage faltered in the face of his opponent's hatred. The space marine suddenly had a long combat blade in his hand and drove it into Cassandra's flank. The tip scraped along the bone shield before finding a weak spot and punching into one of Cassandra's lungs. Bloody spittle sprayed the Iron Hand's legionary's face. Cassandra reached down and took hold of the warrior's throat, pulling it out in a welter of glistening tubes and squirting arterial blood. With the last of his life, the space marine stabbed Cassandra twice more, but there was no strength behind the blows. The blade slipped from his fingers as the life went out of him. Cassandra rose to his feet, watching the coagulating blood fall from the ruin of tracheal tissue in his grip. He hurled it away, disgusted and horrified at what he had done. A servant of the Imperium was dead by his hands, and the enormity of the deed struggled to find a place in his mind where it could be understood. Felix Cassandra, captain of the Imperial Fists, had murdered a warrior of the Iron Hands. Oily tears streamed down his face, and his stomach lurched with revulsion. He threw back his head and howled as the battle swirled around him in bloodshed and violence. Alone, in the midst of the rampaging monsters, Cassandra knew the true horror of what Apothecary Fabius had done to them. The sudden shock of deceleration, the boom of locking bolts slamming back, and the heat wash from a magna melter. Stark light poured into the Stormbird as the ramp pistoned down, and Lucius waited until a good dozen of his fellow warriors had stormed into the teeth of the Iron Hand's guns before launching himself into the fray. No sense in being the chaff cut down in the first withering hails of gunfire, after all. Thudding impacts spanked from the hull of the Stormbird, suppressing fire from rhinos and static defences. The embarkation deck of a starship made an easy target from the point of view of getting assault craft on board, but they were well served by guns and defenders. Lucius scanned the placement of the Iron Hands in a heartbeat, a dispiriting lack of imagination in their arrangement. He saw Gilliman's prescriptive influence in the defences and sneered at the Iron Hands' desperate urge to follow someone new. A shot clipped his shoulder, sending a burst of pain through him. More and more it felt as though his armour were becoming part of him, like a hardened skin with receptors for pain and pleasure in equal measure. It was a welcome idea. He jumped aside as a vicious burst of autocannon fire soared the length of the assault ramp. Sheeting sparks poured down like neon rain as explosive shells detonated in the midst of the charging Emperor's children. A score of warriors were blown to shredded meat, another handful cut up with mechanical thoroughness. Blood sloshed from the ramp, but Lucius didn't spare a thought for the dead. Four Stormbirds had breached the embarkation deck alongside a number of boarding torpedoes, and a fuzzed overlay on his visor told him another three had broken through in other areas of the enemy ship. This vessel was doomed, and all that remained was to make sport of its crew. More Emperor's children were gaining the decks, but it was the tide of bestial monstrosities attacking the Iron Hands that demanded Lucius's attention. He grinned as he saw Fabius at the top of the torpedo's ramp, like a proud parent watching his offspring. And what offspring? A wondrous menagerie of beautiful terata, clearly crafted from the Legion gene template. A tide of grotesquerie to match any carnivalia the Phoenician had yet mounted. They were terrible and incredible, and the scope of what Fabius had done was breathtaking. A hulking brute, whose smoking flesh was bright red and furnace hot, slammed aside a rhino like a paper toy. The vehicle's entire flank caved in. Its muscles were enormous, and a swinging fist hurled the armoured vehicle through the air to land 30 meters away in a smashed heap. Bolter fire tore its flesh, cutting grooves through the solid meat of its body. It roared. Its eyes were swollen with blood, its muscles lathered in stinking excretions that reeked of boiled fat. The Iron Hands scrambled to get away from the giant as it smashed another rhino to wreckage, wrenching the still-spinning driveshaft clear to wield as a giant club. Warriors worked in concerted groups to keep their distance while hammering it with explosive rounds from all sides. Lucius sprinted into their midst, his swords cutting them to pieces with fluid, economical strokes. They turned to face him, all pistols and blades, but none were a match for him. He ducked a clumsy sweep of a chain blade, slashing his sword up through the warrior's elbow and spinning around to drive a second blade through the back of his neck and out through the faceplate of his helm. More Emperor's children joined the fight, a whooping, screeching band of maniacal killers led by Bastinea Branx and Lenomia Ruin. Abranx's two swords were darting blurs of steel, but Lucius wasn't impressed. Speed wasn't skill, and more often than not his blows inflicted clumsy wounds with no finesse. Ruin fought with his hollow daggers, slender-bladed poniards that drooled hissing tears of venom. Those he wounded were left spasming in toxic convulsions, but few of his victims were killed. Perhaps that was the point. Lucius left them to it, slipping through the fighting with an assassin's grace, his blades instruments of flamboyant murder. Bodies pressed in all around, but Lucius moved like smoke through the midst of struggling Iron Hands and Fabius's monstrous killers. The Iron Hands fought with a kind of mechanistic doggedness and took a good deal of killing. Lucius felt a giddy excitement when a warrior who should have died from the high cut to his neck and a simultaneous thrust up into the chest cavity clubbed him to the ground with an iron fist like a pile-driving hammer. He reeled from the blow, but recovered quickly as the warrior closed to finish him. Viscous fluid poured from his terrible wounds, but its shimmering petrochemical sheen told Lucius the blades had only split some mechanized component. "There's barely enough flesh on you to kill," he said, swaying aside from a clumsy chainsword sweep. Lucius spun on his heel and drove his elbow into the side of the warrior's helm. He staggered, but still didn't fall, even when Lucius rammed two swords into the warrior's gut. The Iron Hand bellowed something, but the words were little more than an unintelligible gargle. A bubbling, red-flecked froth sprayed from the grill of his faceplate, and Lucius tasted the oil-rich texture of the blood. Already bored of this fight, Lucius wrenched out his blades and brought them together in a scissoring movement that cut the Iron Hand's head from his shoulders.
Lucius turned and ducked through the scrum of fighting, hoping for at least one warrior aboard this ship who might at least give him a moment's distraction. A nightmarish beast with the hooked arms of a gigantic mantis bounded into the midst of a scratch squad of iron hands and cut three down in as many sweeps of its powerful limbs. It howled as it killed, a plaintive cry that was part hatred, part anguish. Cybus swung the weapon mount of his rhino around and kept the floating reticule in his augmetic eyes married to its skull. A stream of guided bolter shells shredded its upper half in a confetti of rich red tissue. Warriors encased in battle plate the colours of fever dreams charged from smoke-wreathed assault craft. They bore the distinctive aquila upon their chests, albeit disfigured, which marked them as the Emperor's children, but no other sign remained to identify them as that once proud legion. Their armour was bedecked with skin fetishes and bloody trophies of war, crawling with obscene symbols and welded hooks. Though his body had long ago eschewed the weakness of flesh for the purity of iron, hate flared in his heart at the sight of the Emperor's children. These degenerate scum had murdered his Primarch, and in that one moment Vermanus Cybus had never felt more alive or been more human. Before the betrayal at Istvan, Cybus had fought beside the Phoenicians' warriors on numerous occasions. He had always respected their devotion to the attainment of perfection, finding much to admire in their martial ethos. Many years ago, he had argued long into the night with a young officer named Rylanor on the merits of organic strength against augmented power, mocking the legionary's faith in his flesh while extolling the virtue of iron. Was young Rylanor now among these degenerates? Would Cybus now have to kill a warrior he had once admired? The thought did not trouble him and only served to vindicate his belief in the superiority of iron over blood and bone. The Emperor's children spread out through the deck, firing wildly and howling a strange battle cant that tore at Cybus's augmetics and filled his skull with piercing static like a thousand screams. Howls, shrieking blades, and strobing flares of gunfire filled the embarkation deck as the Iron Hands fought the boarders in bloody close quarters. Mutant limbs and gene-spliced claws tore at war-forged battleplate, and in return chainswords and point-blank bolter fire ripped through the monster's hideous bodies. Cybus played the fire of his storm bolters over them, seeing that some were falling without wounds caused by his own men. He saw one distorted legionary collapse as his overwrought anatomy finally rebelled and combusted from within. Another simply exploded as rampant cellular mutation ripped him apart and transformed him into a writhing mass of jellied growths like a fleshy coral reef. Cybus paused in his slaughter as he saw a figure in the midst of the beasts, an armoured warrior with a hideous contraption of blades, drills and clattering dissection tools at his shoulders, like a surgical version of a servo harness. He swung the cupola around, but the figure was obscured by his monstrous cohorts before he could fire. Cybus dismissed the solitary figure and scanned the fighting with the calm awareness of a tactical planner in the barracks room. The monsters were contained, for now, his warriors' resilience and their own biological instability keeping them from significant breakthroughs, but the Emperor's children were in danger of overrunning the deck.
"First echelon, contain the right flank," ordered Cybus as warriors in purple and gold and stretched skin moved to surround them. "Reserve one. Deploy now."
The rhinos swung around like a closing gate, moving in smooth support of their infantry while keeping punishing bursts of rounds chewing the Emperor's children. Static guns and emplaced turrets flensed the open areas of the deck, pinning the flanking force in place while the Iron Hands redeployed. Cybus allowed himself a moment of grim satisfaction. The Emperor's children would pay for their folly. The battle ebbed and flowed below him.
A swirling, heaving mass of rampaging fury, clinical, tactical nous, and theatrical flamboyance. As an exercise in different modes of fighting, it would have made a fascinating study. But Sharokin was more interested in locating the nodal points of the enemy attack, where a sudden strike would cause the most discord. He swung through the upper trusses and service gantries of the embarkation deck, always in motion and pausing only to assess the tactical situation. Vermanus Saibus was an uncompromising man of little personal charisma, but he had a circuitous grasp of the methodology of combat. His warriors were reacting to every thrust of the Emperor's children with alacrity and swift logic, even if the attackers were not fighting with logic as their guide. If the architects of this assault had hoped to break the defenders in one punishing blow, they were to be sorely disappointed. The monstrous things were being slowly beaten back, hot animalistic fury no match for the icy calm and unbending nature of the Iron Hands. Sharokin saw a number of Emperor's children in the thick of the hardest fighting, and a brutish killer with two blades who bludgeoned a path through the defenders. A warrior in armour bedecked with spikes followed in his wake, fighting with a pair of daggers that were clearly envenomed. But there was one warrior Sharokin saw again and again who drew his attention the most. A swordsman of sublime skill, this warrior knew the gaps between life and death like no other, passing between blades and bullets as if he was wraith-slipping, as easily as another man might cross a room. His blades wove in and out of the spaces occupied by the living, and in so doing ended them. This was the man he needed to kill. Lucius saw the shadow bearing down on him an instant before it struck. He twisted to avoid whatever was coming at him, but even he wasn't fast enough. The impact was like being hit by a siege hammer, and the air was driven from his lungs as the swooping warrior slammed into the deck. He rolled as a black-bladed sword sliced down, and he blocked another with instinctual speed. Lucius saw a figure in black lunge at him and rolled his wrists to bring his blades together in a blocking cross. He twisted his grip and spun on his heel to deliver a killing strike to his opponent's throat. His blade struck razor-edge steel, and only a desperate parry kept his own head on his shoulders as a silent blade came at him. Lucius was impressed, pleased to have found a warrior who knew which end of a sword to use. Most other opponents would have lost their weapons in his first block. "You have some skill," he said, as they circled one another. The warrior didn't reply, and only then did Lucius notice that this was no Iron Hand. "Raven Guard," he said, recognizing the grip, stance, and angle of blades favored by Korax's shadow warriors. "That explains why you're still alive." The Raven Guard attacked in a darting series of blinding feints, high cuts and dazzlingly fast thrusts that Lucius parried, dodged, and backed away from in an increasingly swift-paced duel. The warrior wasn't just skilled, he was talented too, gifted even. "I haven't killed any little black birds in a while," giggled Lucius, "since Istvan at least." The warrior didn't react to Lucius's goading, which marked him as even more skilled than he'd thought. Realizing he would not easily get a rise out of the Raven Guard, Lucius put aside his need to humiliate his opponent as well as defeat him. Time and time again they came at each other, spinning like dancers locked in a routine that could only end in the death of one of the performers. Lucius studied the warrior as they fought. His movements were like oil in the air, a slick progression of flowing poise. His blade work was flawless, technically perfect, but empowered by an innate understanding of the art form of the sword. With a start, Lucius realized that this warrior was almost the equal of him. A jolt of uncertainty flooded Lucius at the thought that the warrior had a chance of besting him. He laughed, giddy at having finally met a worthy foe, his every nerve surging at the idea of defeat, even if the possibility was so remote as to be next to impossible. That such a possibility existed at all was reason enough to revel in it. "My friend," he said, parrying a low strike to the groin and riposting with a playful strike to the head, "your name, I must know it." The warrior responded with a viper-swift lunge to the neck and a spinning cut to the throat. Angry now, Lucius batted away the strike and slashed at the Raven Guard's wrist. A black blade turned the blow aside, and a counter-strike of uncanny speed cut a groove in the eagle on Lucius's plastron. "Answer me, damn you!" snapped Lucius, and another stinging cut slipped past his defences to open a deep gash on his cheek. Astounded, Lucius broke the circle of the duel and lowered his weapons in astonishment. Blood dripped from his face, and his anger vanished in an ecstatic burst of happiness. "You wounded me!" he said, amazed and thrilled at the same time. "You actually wounded me! Do you know how rare that is?" Before the warrior could answer, not that Lucius really expected him to, another figure burst into the circle of the duel and barreled him to the ground. Lucius fell hard, losing his grip on his swords and striking his head on a buckled deck plate. Through a haze of blood and dizziness, he saw a blur of pink and gold throw itself at the Raven Guard swordsman. The new arrival swung a pair of swords in a beheading cut, and even through a red veil of blood, Lucius recognised the clumsy bladework of Bastony Abranks. The Raven Guard ducked below the blow and spun around his attacker. His swords plunged into Abranks's midriff in the gap between his backplate and culotte. Abranks grunted in pain, but before he could do more than spin to face his attacker, his throat was opened by one blade and the top of his skull by another. Abranks fell dead, and Lucius laughed to see him so humiliated. He doubted even Fabius could undo that kind of damage. The Raven Guard didn't pause to enjoy his kill and sprang forwards to finish Lucius. But the fates, it seemed, had purpose yet for him. A blue-hot dome of electric fire exploded in the centre of the embarkation deck, sending a booming thunderclap of displaced air through the arched chamber like the shockwave of an atmospheric munition. The Raven Guard stumbled, and Lucius tasted the bitter metallic taste of teleportation energy. He blinked away the after-images of multiple light sources and phantom echoes of things that had never existed. The fighting in the embarkation deck ceased as the blue light vanished. In its place stood Perturabo within a circle of robotic guardians.